Okay, today's daf is Chulin daf Hey. There's a sheet to go along with the first part of the daf. Yesterday's daf, there was a discussion, is one of the answers to a question on Rava. They brought in this Shitav Rav Anan, okay, in the name of Shmuel. It's really Shitav Shmuel. And in the middle of the daf, you can see it. It says, Gufa Amar Rav Anan Amar Shmuel. You can also look, I put it on the sheet. Yisrael mumar la'avodah kochavim mutar la'echom shchitato. Right, we're in this discussion of whose shchita is acceptable. Is someone who's, let's say, a mumar? We started with Friday already. Someone who's on daf gimel. Someone who's a mumar. Rava said a Yisrael mumar ochel nevelot l'teavon. Remember that was the whole thing. You could check his knife, and as long as his knife is good, you can eat from a shchita, because there's a concept. And remember, I said on when we were there, I don't know why the Gemara didn't mention it then. But then the Gemara on yesterday's daf mentioned lo shavik inish hatera v'achili suva. Right, that somebody doesn't. If something's permitted and there's a permissible way to do it, he would obviously do it in the permissible way if he had the choice. But then the question is going to be, what about a mumar lavodah kochavim? Okay, are we going to have a hierarchy of mitzvot, of ones that we do accept, ones that we don't accept? So now the Gemara is going to say, according to Shmuel, even if you're a mumar lavodah kochavim, we can assume it's just avodah kochavim that you do, which is pretty interesting because it's pretty basic, worshiping idols. But if you're going to do that, you're mutar le'echom mishchitato. Okay, Rav Amram holds, Rav Anan holds in the name of Shmuel, that even if you worship avodah zarah, you can eat from mishchita. And what's his proof, which is a really interesting proof? His proof is, or the Gemara brings it, it's not clear if it's his proof or not, but where do we get it from? Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, if you recall, in Sefer Melachim, he joins forces with Ahab in order to fight against the enemy. So they join forces, and there's this whole thing, Ka'amika Amecha, Kesusai Kesusecha, right? I'm going with you all the way. It sounds like in root, right? Amecha Ka'ami and all that. Amecha Ami. So anyway, they say the fact that he ate with Ahav, who was obviously an idol worshiper, right? What do you prove from here? That you can eat the shchita of a mumar of a avodah kochavim. Now, the assumption is, obviously, Ahav wasn't shechting his own animals, but if Ahav, right, then there's a whole long discussion in the end of the daf from yesterday about, you know, maybe Ahav obviously didn't shecht it, but his people shechted it, and the assumption is if Ahav was not a worshiper, obviously his workers were idol worshippers. And then there's a whole thing, well, maybe Yehoshaphat ate
his own,
right? And not when there was Obadiah, who was Ahav's servant.
It's a peculiar dilemma that I don't think,
do they resolve it? So we're going to see. So now, right, they end off at the end, we'll just start with toward the end of the daf. V'dilma zvach gavre da Ahav, Ahav, v'gavre, Achal Achav v'gavre. In other words, maybe Achav and his people ate what they slaughtered, and Gavre de Yehoshaphat, Achav, Zvoch Gavre de Yehoshaphat, Achal Yehoshaphat v'gavre. Maybe he had his own people come in and do the shchita. So they say, no, it can't possibly be, because lo hava maflig nafshe minei. Okay, in other words, what are we going to assume? He certainly wouldn't have separated himself from Ahav's people, right? Imagine you go to the king's house and you say, well, I'm bringing my own slaughterers, right? There's no way he would have done that. Remember, the whole thing was he wanted to go into a pact with Ahav. Now, if you want to go into a pact with him and then you say, but I'm bringing my own slaughterers, you know, my own shochtim, that's not going to make for a great relationship. So then they say, Minalan, how do we know that he wouldn't have actually separated himself out? And he could say, look, I'm Melech Yehuda, you're Melech Israel, I have my ways of doing things, you have your ways of doing things. And that's because of the pasuk I was mentioning, Ilem Amidichtiv. If you want to say that it's for sure he wouldn't have separated himself and had his own shochtim, because it says in the pasuk, Kamoni Kamocha Ke'ami Ka'amecha. Right? He says, I'm going to be just like you, right? I'm going to do like you, my nation will be like your nation. If you think that that means I'm going to eat whatever you eat and I'm going to go along with you whatever you do, elameata kisusai kisusecha hachanami, that's kisusai kisusecha has nothing to do with eating kosher meat or not. In other words, if you say kami kamecha kamoni kam, then you could say that all has to do with I'm going to eat with you, I'm going to do everything with you. But kisusai kisusecha has nothing to do with kosher, right? A sus is not a kosher animal no matter what. So you can't say that, which means Ella. What does it really mean when he says kamoni kamocha kami kamecha? It's not relating to eating. What's it relating to? Ella, it's relating to the fact that they're going out to war together. And what does he say? My dehavi asusecha, tehavi asusi. Whatever happens to your horses and the war is going to happen to my horses. And therefore, you have to explain the rest of it. Hachanami, my dehavi alach, ilave. Ve'iloyamach, tehavi ali ve'ilave ami. He's basically saying, we're coming into a pact together. This has nothing to do with eating kosher food and not kosher food. Okay, so therefore you can't say that it's referring to that. So we're still trying to figure out, how do we know that Yehoshaphat... So if we say that, then we still are stuck with, so when Yehoshaphat goes into a pact with Ahab and he says, Kamonika Kamocha, he doesn't mean I'm going to eat with you and I'm not going to do something separate from you. It just means that we're going to go to war together. So now, and whatever happens to your nation in war will happen to my nation. Ela mehacha. So we're still trying to figure out where we can find a pasuk that Yehoshaphat clearly ate from Ahav's shchita, which would show that what? Rav Anan says, in the name of Shmuel, that a mumar la'avodah kochavim can eat with, can a Jew eat from a mumar la'avodah kochavim's food. Okay, so now what do we have? So we still need a proof that, about with Yehoshaphat. Ela mehacha. Umelech Yisrael v'Yehoshaphat melech Yehuda yoshvim ish al kiso melubashim begadim bagoren petach shar shomron. So what do you have here? They were sitting ish al kiso, okay, each in their seats, melubashim begadim bagoren. They were wearing begadim in the goren. Okay, in other words, what do you have here? This image of these two kings together. Okay, they're each on their kiso with their nice begadim. Begoren petach shar shamron. Now, something's very strange here. They're sitting in the goren, okay, which could either be the storage house or the threshing house. Now, the threshing floor. Now, why would there be a storage house or a threshing floor in the petach of the Shar of Shamron? It's not the place where you would generally, in the Shar of the city, that's where the judges sit, that's where, right, things go on, but certainly not a Goren. And even if there was a Goren, why would it be telling us there's a Goren? It seems a little odd, strange detail to be telling us. So my Goren, what is this Goren? Ile ma Goren mamash, atu Shar Shamron Goren. Hava, what, you think there was really a Goren in the Shar Shamron? Ela ki goren. It means it was like a goren. Now, what does a goren have to do with anything? Titznam, what's the shape of a goren? It's a half, right? Especially if we say a storage house, it's a circle, right? It's round. Titznam, Sanhedrin haita kechatzi goren agula, kedesh yuhu ro'in zedzen. They talk about the Sanhedrin, that the Sanhedrin, the way they would sit was like a half a goren, a semicircle, so that when the judges were talking, they could see one another. So what do you see from here? That they were sitting in a way that they could see one another, which means they had mutual respect between them, which means that whatever one would do, right, in other words, if he would eat, he would be, it proves from here, again, it's not exactly the strongest proof, but that Yehoshaphat would saw eye to eye with Ahav on everything and came into a pact with him all the way, which meant that he also ate from his food. Okay, remember, this all went back to the pasuk that we started with, which we didn't read today, but it was yesterday. Okay, here, by the way, I didn't go back to yesterday's stuff. There was this funny line about, and he shechs him animals, which seems he ate from it, right? And that was the whole thing. And then it says, and he seduced him to go with him to Ramot Gilad. And the assumption is, how did he seduce him? Through food, right? The food is always the way of getting people to do things, which I thought was one of those dapim to remember if you ever want to quote it somewhere about food being the way to seduce people. There it is in the Gemara. And it says, maybe Dilma Bidvarim, they said, Ein Hasata Bidvarim, right? You can only seduce someone using food, right? The Gemara even goes on to prove it. It says, you know, there's no such thing as seducing without food. Very Jewish concept. Okay. Now, so we basically now proved that's where he gets it from, which is very interesting proof, just because Yehoshaphat ate with Ahav, right? How that would necessarily prove, but they assume from here it proves that, right, we saw kings did all sorts of things that weren't necessarily halachic. However, there's a lot to be shown in general in the text about Yehoshaphat, that he was a good king and he went in the way of God. So if he ate from Ahav, it must be it's okay. That's Shmuel's proof. Now we're going to bring, okay, you can look at the chart. Okay, we have number one was our chizuk, that was our support. Now we're going to have two chizukim we're going to try to bring. further proofs that you can eat from non-Jewish, from non-Jewish, you can eat from a person who worships Avodah Zarah, Yisrael, from his Shechita. If you can see already, they reject both other potential proofs that they bring. And then they're going to bring a question from a problem from a source, from a Tannaitic source, and they're going to actually say, we're left with a question. And in fact, the poskim don't hold by what Rav Hanan says. Okay? That's the structure for what's going to be the next section. Lema Maseihele. Let's bring a proof from here. When, again, from Ahav, when Eliyahu runs away from Har Carmel after the whole incident, he runs away, and he's by himself, and where does he get food from? So it says there, in typical Eliyahu style, in, you know, Nisi, in a miraculous kind of way, Ha'orvim mivi'im lo lechem u'basar baboker v'lechem u'basar ba'erev. So the ravens bring him food. Now, where are they bringing this food from? V'amarav Yehuda amarav, mibei tabachei da'achav. He was getting it from the slaughterhouse of Ahav. So what do you see here? Eliyahu was allowed to eat this meat. So what do you see? It must be okay. If Eliyahu can eat it, right? So now what do they answer? Al pi hadibor shani. This is very interesting. What does it say? He was a Navi. Obviously, God told him to eat this, and therefore it was okay. And sometimes it's okay for Nevi'im to go against Halacha, basically. Right? In other words, if there's a shot at Chak, and here he ran away, and his also was, you could say it was pikuach nefesh. He had nothing else to eat. Although they don't use the pikuach nefesh argument, but they say al pi hadibor shani. Tosfot has an interesting, there's an interesting Tosfot here. We'll just read it quickly. Al pi hadibor shani says, what about the fact that there's another halachic problem, which is basar shenitalei min ha'ayin asur, which is if you don't see, you have, let's say, even if there's mostly non-kosher stores, and then all of a sudden you don't know where, right, you don't know what happened to the meat, like you saw it, then you didn't see it anymore, and you don't know, maybe someone switched it for non-kosher meat, so you're not allowed to eat it. So they say, why didn't they raise that as an issue? And then they say, because that you can assume he had nevuah, that basar shen talei min ha'ayin would be for a regular person, because you don't know if they switch the food, but if you're a navi, at least he would know where the meat came from, right? The fact that al pi hadibor shani is something else, that's, okay, so we know, yeah, we can know maybe that it was not mitalei min ha'ayin and someone switched the meat, you know, even if it wasn't mitalei min ha'ayin, we switched the meat, but then we have to have the al pi hadibor about, you know, whether he could actually eat this meat that wasn't kosher. My Orvim, now they're getting off on a tangent, which is once they mention these Orvim, what does it mean these Orvim brought him food? We assume, what does it mean? Ravens brought him food. But now they're going to answer two different answers. So Amar Ravina, Orvim Mamash. Ravina understands these were actually ravens. Amar Le Ravada Bar Menume, Vidilmatre Gavre, Dehavushmayu Orvim. Maybe it was two people whose name was Orev, and they called them Orvim, right? Like the, you know, the Davids, right? The Orvim brought him. Milokhtiv, how do we know that it could be a name? Because doesn't it say in a pasuk, Vayharguet Orev Bitsur Orev? So here it says they killed Orev. So we see that Orev could be a name of a person. That's the Ev Bechule. Okay, that's the pasuk. So Amarle, Itrami Milta, Detravayu Havishmayu Orvim. What, you think they're both? What are the chances, right? It's hard enough to find the person with the name Orev, but what are the chances that the two people who brought him food were named Orev, and therefore they called him Orvim? So what's a better explanation? He answers him, Vidilma al shem mekomam. Maybe they're called Orvim because they came from a place called Orev. And then we call the people Orvim. Milokhtiv, and here's a proof text that we might have something like this. V'aram yatzu gdudim, v'yishbu me'eretz Yisrael na'arak tana. Okay, so now, there's something weird about this pasuk. What's she called? Who'd they take b'shevi? A na'ara k'tana. Why is that weird? Kashele, kari le na'ara, v'kari le k'tana. Na'ara is a different stage than a k'tana. K'tana is under the age of 12 in simanim, right? Na'ara is that small stage after she has simanim, and for those 6 months, she's a na'ara. So either she's a k'tana or she's a na'ara. V'amar rabbi padat, k'tana demin ni'uran. Okay, her she was a ktana, and she came from a place called Ni'uran. So they called her a Na'ara ktana, meaning she was from Na'ara. Okay, it's definitely not the pshat sound of that pasuk, but she's from a place called Na'ara, and they call her that based on her location. So therefore, we could say maybe Orev was the location, and it was talking about two people who came from Orev, or Vim. So then they say, Im kein orviim mebaile. It should have said orviim, the people who came from the place of orev, grammatically it would be orviim, and therefore it doesn't make so much sense. So we have a machloka, okay, this has nothing to do with our topic. This is just once we discuss these orviim, were these actually ravens that brought him, or was it actually two people who brought him the food? Lema meseali. Okay, let's try to find another text that maybe supports him. Hakol, remember, we tried to bring the source about the Orvim, but then we said no, because that was Alpia Dibor, that's something else, and you know, maybe Eliyahu was allowed to, even though we wouldn't be allowed to. Next text. Hakol shochatim va'afilu kuti, va'afilu arel, va'afilu Yisrael mumar. Okay, anyone can shecht, even a kuti, even an arel, someone who doesn't have a brit milah, and even a Yisrael mumar. So now we're going to have to figure out what kind of Yisrael mumar are we talking about. So first we're going to talk about the arel. Hai arel hechidami. What type of arel? Ile mashemetu achiv machmat milah. If it was his brothers died, if two brothers died from machmat milah, then you don't have to give the third one a brit milah. Hai Yisrael ma'aliyu. We wouldn't call him an arel. It's true, he doesn't have a brit milah, but he's not called an arel. An arel is generally someone who doesn't keep mitzvot. So therefore, it's not him. Elapshita mumar la'arelot. It must be he didn't do a brit milah. He's a mumar for that one mitzvah, right? He didn't do brit milah. Ema seifa, but then look at the seifa. Va'afilu Yisrael mumar hechidami. So what's the Yisrael mumar that you can accept his shechita? Im mumar ledavar achad. If it's just that he hasn't done one mitzvah, well then obviously it can't be that, because hainu mumar la'arelot. Right? That's the person we just said, for mumar la'arelot, it means he didn't do a brit milah. That's a mumar for one particular mitzvah. El alav, right? And even if you say, let's say, brit milah is a bigger mitzvah than other mitzvot, well, of course, if we accept a mumar la'arelot shchita, then of course we can accept someone who doesn't do some other random mitzvah. El alav mumar la'avodat kochavim. So doesn't it mean then, what would be more than brit milah, let's say, that you'd have to say even him? Ah, mumar la'avodat kochavim. And then what does it prove? Uchid Rav Anan. And then it proves Rav Anan that mumar la'avodat kochavim, you're allowed to have a shechita, because it said there, hakol shochatin, afilu kuti, afilu arel, afilu Yisrael mumar. So what do they answer? Lo. Lo olam emalach mumar la'avodat kochavim lo. No. You could definitely say, mumar la'avodat kochavim, you cannot accept a shechita. Damar mar, why is that? Chamura avodat kochavim, shekola kofer ba kimodeh b'chol ha'torah kula. Modeh doesn't mean, right, modeh often means admits he agrees. Here it means the opposite. He goes again, right? He basically is underlying all of the entire Torah by believing in Elilim, which, right, after learning about Avodah Zarah in general, you could see why they would say that. So basically, of course, you can't accept their Shechita. Ella, so what could it possibly mean if it's not Mumar LeDavar Achad, or maybe it is Mumar LeDavar Achad, but it's going to be Mumar for a very specific Davar Achad. And what Davar Achad are they telling you? Mumar LeOto Davar Uchid Harava. So you could explain that, what's this talking about? It's someone who's a mumar specifically for shechita. And that it follows Rava, who told us already that if he's mumar l'shechita, remember he's mumar that he'll eat non-kosher meat l'teavon, meaning if he's hungry and that's what's there, or he doesn't want to spend extra money or extra effort, then you can accept his shechita as long as you check the knife and all that. So that's how they understand the end of that braita, in which case they show you can't use this to prove Rav Anan in the name of Shmuel. Okay, so like I said, we had, number one, you can look back at the chart also. Number one, we brought the chizuk from Yehoshaphat, which we agreed was a bit of a strange proof. We then brought two other potential proofs, which the Gemara knocks out, right? The Gemara didn't knock out the proof of Yehoshaphat, even though they tried to. In the end, they're left with it, but again, it's a bit of a strange proof. And then we have these other two proofs, the Orvim with Eliyahu, unique case, Hakol Shochatin, etc., where we thought the Mumar at the end was Ovei Kochavim. We can explain, no, maybe it doesn't mean Ovei Kochavim, maybe it's a mumar for shechita specifically, right, for eating non-kosher meat.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I really don't understand how they cannot go case by case. Like, I don't understand even the whole issue.
What do you mean by case by case of what?
Like, when I was reading this yesterday, I was thinking, you know, everybody has such different degrees of machmir. Like, how do they define somebody as, you know,
a mumar for something? Okay, so first of all, it's important to note that a mumar, for when they talk about mumar, the poskim talk about that he has to have done it a few times. We're not talking about someone who on a one-off did something. We're talking about someone who is muhzak, that this is something that in general they don't do. Okay, they've already not, you know, kept this mitzvah a number of times. And then that's always the question, right? What's the litmus test for how do we decide is someone shomer mitzvot enough that we can rely on them? Remember, you're relying on them to do something halachic for you. Not like we're saying, do we accept them as Jews or not? It's the question is, do we, just like kashrut, right? Can you eat in somebody's house? Based on what can you define whether you can eat in someone's house? So what they're saying here is, on what basis can we accept the shochet, right? If we know for a fact that he doesn't keep a particular mitzvah, always, can we accept a shlita or not? And then what's interesting is they look into, well, does he eat non-kosher meat because he doesn't believe in Judaism, you know, or because he thinks the whole concept of shchita is not correct, he doesn't believe in it, or is it just that it's more convenient for him? And then, you know, if that's the issue, then we can judge it differently.
But it's hard to know. It's based on hearsay, there's no witnesses.
Right, so the question is, how do we know what this person, right? They don't get into that aspect. What does it take to create a chazaka on a person that he does, you know? And how do you know whether he's doing it lehachis or l'teavon? It's a big question, right? They don't really get into that. Here, they're really talking theoretically. Could one, right? It's a very interesting theoretical argument. Could you trust one shchita if he himself is not makpid on mitzvot? Just like we have people working in restaurants who aren't halachic, who don't keep halachot at home, and then, you know, but there's a mashgiach there, and there's someone, and they're working there, and they, you know, there's rules, and they have to keep to the rules, right? How do you balance that?
Are there any psaks from this section about kashrut?
Well, not about kashrut, about shchita specifically. This is a shchita-oriented, you know, do we accept the shchita? So we don't paskin like Ravanan that it's okay. We paskin against Ravanan that you can't, and we paskin that if someone's lahachis, you can't, right? But if they're l'teavon, then you can. Okay, and then, again, it becomes a little bit of a debate. How do you decide that? Meitive. Okay, this is a drasha in Pasuk, the second Pasuk in Sefer Vayikra. Okay, it says here, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, Adam ki akriv mikem korban l'Hashem, mina beiman, mina bakar, mina tzon, takrivu korban chem. Remember mina beiman, then we had mina bakar, mina tzon. Okay, this is the korban ola. So what does it say here? Why does it say Adam ki akriv mikem, korban l'Hashem? What does it tell you? Mikem v'lo kulchem, lehotzi et hamumar. Someone who's a mumar is not allowed to bring a korban ola. Adam ki akriv mikem from among you, meaning not all of you. This is very interesting. Okay, keep reading. Mikem bachem chilakti velo ba'umot. What does this mean? Fascinating. A Jew who's a mumar can't bring a korban ola, but a non-Jew, right? Only bachem chilakti. Only in Jews did I make that distinction. God is saying, right? The drasha is saying about God, but not ba'umot. A non-Jewish person, if we're going to allow a non-Jewish person, we don't care whether he keeps mitzvot or he doesn't keep mitzvot, right? First of all, most non-Jews aren't keeping mitzvot anyway, so it makes sense. That's interesting. Min ha-behema, lahavi b'nei adam shadomim la-behema. Okay, what does this say? We accept from people who are like behemot. Okay? Which means, right, they're not mekayimim mitzvot. So now we're going to have to explain. Okay, so now they say, Mikan amru, so what do we learn from this? Mikablim korbanot miposhei Yisrael kadei sheyachzeru behem b'tshuva. So from the fact that we say mina be'ema, right, obviously mina be'ema, the pshat is that we are talking about animal sacrifices. But now what do they say? Mina be'ema means the people that are like behemot, meaning they don't keep mitzvot, we can accept their korbanot. It's very strange, because didn't we say a minute ago, mikem enakulchem? And now all of a sudden we say we are accepting people, poshei Yisrael, so we're obviously going to have to distinguish who are we talking about in the beginning and who are we talking about at the end. And the reason we accept korbanot miposhei Yisrael is so that they're chozer b'tshuva. Chutz min, now we're going to have, okay, there's three categories. There's mikem velo kulchem, lo tziyat amumar. Then we have poshei Yisrael we do accept. So there's going to be a difference between a mumar and poshei Yisrael. And now we're going to say, but there are a few poshei Yisrael we don't accept. Who are they? Chutz min hamumar, umenasechet hayayin, umachalel shabatot b'frahesya. Okay, someone who's a mumar, which we're going to have to figure out, so what kind of mumar is this, right? We seem to have three categories. Okay, even though this is like the first category, but this seems to be adding something new that the beginning didn't say. So there's the mumar. This is why also I charted it out on the, there's a little chart within the chart on the page, where eventually with the answer, how we're going to explain each of these sections. So there's a mumar, there's someone who's menasechet hayayin, that's avodah zarah, right? He gives the wine to the elilim. And he's mechalel shabbatot b'frahesya, okay? He does chilul shabbos in front of other people, which seems to not be distinguished between l'hachis or l'te'avon. The fact that he does it for Hester, we don't care what his motivation was. And there, that goes back to you, Shari. If we see him being l'chel Shabbat for Hester, that's enough. There we don't have to start going into, did he do it l'hachis? Did he do it just because it was easier for him? Okay, so now they say, Hagu fakashya. This whole source doesn't make any sense. Amar tami kevelo kuchen lohotziya tamumar. Right? So how can you say on the one hand they can't bring korbanot, and then you say they can, so that they can do tshuva? So the answer, halokashya. This is not difficult. Resha mumar l'cholatara kula. When we say a mumar can't bring korbanot, we mean someone who rejects all of the Torah. Again, what does it mean, all the Torah? Does it mean every single mitzvah? Does it mean the majority, right? Probably is the majority. Mitziata, when they say we do accept korbanot, what do we mean? Mumar ledavar achad. That's someone who kavua doesn't keep one of the mitzvot. Emasef, obviously, where's the line in between, right? And there's a lot of, right, between one and all, there's obviously a lot of gray in the middle. Emasef, but what about the end? Chutz min ha-mumar menasecha tayayin ha-machalel Shabbat b'frahesya. Hai mumar hechidami. What's the case of this mumar? Imumar l'chol ha-tara kula hainu reisha. We already said that in the beginning. So it can't be mumar l'chol ha-tara kula. V'imumar l'davar achad, kasha mitziyate. If you say it's a mumar for one thing, well, that already we said, you can bring korbanot, because that's the line, mekablim korbanot miposhe Yisrael. El alav hachi kamar. It must mean this. Chutz min ha-mumar l'nasecha tayayin ha-machalel Shabbat b'frahesya. It's not three things, a mumar, a menasech yayin, and a mechalel Shabbat. It's two things. It's a mumar lenasech yayin and a mumar lechalel Shabbatot. It's someone who does those two, which are big ones, right? There's kol ha-tara kula, there's one, and then there's maybe one, but it's a big one, okay? And that we're going to treat like kol ha-tara kula. Alma, what do you see from here then? Mumar l'avodat kochavim havi mumar lekol ha-tara kula b'tiyuvta d'rav anan tiyuvta. Okay, and that basically rejects Rav Anan, because from here, the only thing you could possibly say is that it's a mumar for avodah kochavim, in which case you see that we don't accept his shchita. So therefore, it's not exactly about shchita. It's not accepting their korbanot. But the assumption is not accepting their korbanot has to do with sacrifice. Has to do with slaughtering, so that it's connected. Now, okay, we're finished now with our section on knocking out Rav Anan. Okay, we're first trying to prove and then trying to knock it out. Now we're going to see, they're going to go off on a bit of a tangent about this braita. They're now going to say, this law that we can't accept korbanot from a mumar, we learned it from that pasuk that we just said about the korban olah, mehatam nafka, don't we learn it from a different pasuk? Okay, a pasuk about the korban chatat. Okay, it says, me'ama aretz. So they say, Am Aretz comes to exclude the mumar, okay? That Am Aretz can bring, but not a mumar. Rabbi Shimon ben Yossi Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Asher lo te'asena b'shgaga v'ashem. Okay? He says, no, we're going to learn it from this verse, not from Am Aretz. He says, we learn it from the verse, Asher lo te'asena b'shgaga v'ashem. Okay, what do we learn from this, right? This is all about a korban chatat. You do it for someone who, right, does it b'shgaga. Right, one second. Right, and then it says, "Oh, hoda alav chatato asher chatav evi hashamo." Okay, so now it sounds like what? Hashav miyediato may be korban al shigato. Eino shav miyediato, eino may be korban al shigato. That you only bring a korban in your shkaga. Right, this is all if you didn't know whether you did it or not. So then you bring an hasham. But then when you find out that it was a mistake, then you bring a korban. So what do they say? It's not just that you have to that you realize that you made a mistake, but you have to be chozer miyediato. In other words, you have to say, "Oh, I feel bad that I did that mistake." Okay, then you bring a korban shkaga. But if you don't feel bad, if you find out, "Oh, I accidentally echelev," and you don't really care, then you can't bring a korban chatat for this. Okay, so eino shav miyediato, eino maybe korban al shigato. So what do you see from there? There's two different sources. Either Me'ama Aretz says, and not a mumar, or Asher lo te'asena b'shkaga v'ashem proves to you that if you're still a mumar and you don't think it was bad what you did, then you can't bring a korban. So now they say, okay, this is all in the context of the question. Why do we need the pasuk of Ola? We could have learned it from one of these two psukim. Now before they get to the answer, they're going to say, my benai, what's the difference between these two verses, either Me'ama Aretz prat le'mumar or Hashav miyediato may be korban al shigato, but eino shav eino may be korban. Amar Rav Hamnuna mumar le'echol chelev v'hevi korban al hadam ika b'nayu. Remember we learned this, that what? What if you're a mumar, okay, chelev and dam are the two classic examples that you have to bring a korban chatap for, okay, if you accidentally ate them. So now, what if you're a mumar to eat chelev, and then you want to bring a korban because you ate dam, okay? You don't care about eating chelev, but you do care about eating dam. So you're a mumar for chelev, but you're not a mumar for dam. So that's an ika b'nayu. So why is that? How does it work out? Because if you say a mumar, we don't accept, then it doesn't matter whether you're a mumar for chelev or you're a mumar for dam. We're not going to accept your korban. But if we say you're shav miyadiyato, you can bring a korban. Well, this guy felt bad about eating chelev. He didn't care about eating. I'm sorry. He felt bad, which is the case. He's a mumar for eating chelev, and right, he feels bad about eating dam. So then he shav miyadiyato. The fact that he would eat chelev doesn't really affect his, anything about the dam. So therefore, that would be a difference between them. Anyway, we're still back to our question. Don't we learn it from there? Why are we learning it from here? So the answer, chada bechatat v'chada be'ola. One is bechatat and one is be'ola with tzrichi, and we need them both. Why? De'iash rinan chatat. What might you have thought if we just had it by chatat that a mumar can't bring? What would you have thought? De'la kaparahu. Aval ola de'doronhu ema lekabamine. When you want to get kapara, so we're not going to let you get kapara if you're an avaryan, right? You're a bad guy and you're not interested in doing mitzvot. We're not going to allow your kapara, but if you want to bring a korban ola, and ola is just a gift. Just like we allow non-Jews to bring gifts to the Beit HaMikdash, we can allow Jews to bring gifts to the Beit HaMikdash, even if they're not keeping mitzvot. And therefore, you might have thought, ema lekabel mina, and therefore you need the pasuk also by ola. V'yash minan ola, now you could use the exact right, this classic Gemara, we can flip the logic on its side. If you had the ola, what could you have said? Mishum delav chiyuvahu. It's not a chiyuv to bring an ola. Aval chatat de chiyuvahu, ema lekabel mina. Aval chatat's an obligatory. It's true the guy's not keeping mitzvot, but we don't generally, if someone's not keeping mitzvot, we don't say, right, we're treating you as a non-Jew in general. We treat you as a Jew for always. So we want to allow you the option to get, first of all, allow you to fulfill your obligation. You have an obligation. Should do it. And therefore, you might have thought, chata we allow, ola not, right? But to bring just a gift, we could say, okay, here we're closing the door to you. You don't keep mitzvah, we're not letting you bring gifts to the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, sricha, you need them both. Okay, that was one tangent we went off on. Okay, that was all based on this pasuk. So now they ask, right, this is all, we brought in this braita, the whole pasuk was mi ken, and not not Jews who are mumar can't bring korbanot. And then we said, how'd you get it from there? Don't we get it from chatat, from those two possibilities? And they say, okay, we need it by both. Now, if you remember, at the end of that writing, there was another thing they want to go into, which is when it said mina behema, instead of understanding literally that you're supposed to bring the korban from the behema, they understood it as even a behema can bring a korban, and what's that? A poshei Yisrael. Okay, so now they're going to say, okay, this is all people who believe in animal rights, right? Why is the Gemara going to assume, here, I'll read it inside first, you're assuming behema is a negative term? Okay, why are you assuming behema is such a negative term that you have to say it means a person who's a bad guy who doesn't keep mitzvot? It seems like a very positive pasuk, right? God is going to save Adam and behema. Behema is equated with man. Seems, you know, there's your animal rights psukim. But Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, and how does Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav darshan this? He doesn't understand them as animals. What does he say? Elu b'nei Adam shehem arumim bedat u'mesimin atzman kebehema. Okay, these are people who are, how do we explain this? They're
clever and knowledgeable, conduct themselves as humbly as though they were lowly animals.
Okay, right. So Rashi says ka'adam arishon u'mesimin atzman kebehema dik'ei ruach. In other words, they lower themselves. They're humble. Okay, humility is what they have. They lower themselves to be like a behema. So now they say, you can't prove from that pasuk that behema always means positive because hatam ktiv adam u behema. It equated there, it said adam and behema, so it was putting behema in a positive spin. But hacha behema lechude, but here behema was by itself ktiv. Okay, and therefore, said, okay, so now they say, okay, so according to what you're saying, kol echad ktiv adam u behema mal yutehi, so you're going to say now, so anytime behema is mentioned with adam, it must be a good term. Well, I'm going to disprove you because vaha ktiv, v'zarati et beit Yisrael, zera adam v'zera behema. Okay, that's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and it's saying, right, the pasuk in the Gemara in Sota says, it says, Right, lo kara v'lo shina. Look at Rashi. Mukmin alav masechet sotah. Lo kara v'lo shina v'lo shemesh talmidei chachamim. Alav akatuv omer v'zarati be'Israel zera adam v'zera be'ema. Klamar chachamim v'burim. Kulam azaram lefrotam azaram lefrotam v'lirbotam. Okay, it's saying you're no better than, right? You're a man that's like animal. Okay, and you're no good. So there you see, it's negative. So what did they say now? There, you can't compare that to Adam ubehema, because hatam hachil kekra, zera Adam lechud, v'zera behema lechud. There was a separation between zera Adam, zera behema, so that's not the same as Adam ubehema. Okay, so we're done trying to disprove that whole thing. So basically, that was all an aside to say, why did you say the behema is negative? And then they say, no, it actually could be negative. The only time it's positive is when it comes with Adam and behema, and only when Adam and behema come together and not Zera Adam, Zera behema. Okay, back to our issue. Am Rav Chanan, Am Rav Yaakov, or Idi, Am Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara. Okay, now we're back to not the issue about the Shechitat Avodah Kochavim. We're done with that. Now, you know, Mumar Lavodah Kochavim. Now we're going back to the Kuti. If you remember, we had six explanations of our Mishnah, and two of them were Abai and Rebbe, who explained that according to our Mishnah, Shechita of a Kuti is allowed as long as the Yisrael Omed al Gabav, right, or Yisrael is Nechnas V'Yotzeh, and even B'dieved, right, if he eats it, then it's okay. So now they say in the name of Bar Kapara, that Rabban Gamliel, and we're assuming we're talking about the later Rabban Gamliel, and this was after that Mishnah, okay, that Mishnah, assuming you're going with Abaye and Rabbah and our Mishnah, seems to say Kuti is allowed. Came Rabban Gamliel Ubeiti. No, Nimnu Ashchita Kuti Vasruha. This sounds like it was probably for political reasons, right? In other words, maybe things were going bad with the Kutim, and they wanted to kind of separate them from the community and said, you know, we're making a gzera, or maybe the Kutim in their day were known to be less makpin on halachot, and he made a gzera vasruha. So Amalei Rabbi Zera, the Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi, Shema lo shama Rebbe, ela b'she'en Yisrael omed al gabav. So he says, maybe, okay, Rabbi Zera says, Rebbe here doesn't mean Rebbe. Rebbe means Rabbi Hanan, who said this, or Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi, or, you know, the rabbis who said this, passed this down the name of Rabban Gamliel. Maybe you didn't hear right, but maybe he just meant when Yisrael is not there, right? Which even Abaye and Rava would have agreed with, according to the Pshat of the Mishnah. If there's no Yisrael, then you can't have a Shechit of a Kuti. And that according to Rabbi Zera, maybe Rabban Gamliel wasn't Mechadesh anything. Amar Lei, Dami Haimi Rabbanan, Kedelo Gemirei Inche. Right? This is the big insult to a Talmi Chacham. You seem to be like a person who doesn't know anything. Shmata B'She'en Yisrael Omer Agabav Lememra. That's what you think he would need. Rabban Gamliel would need to get up and say, "We're making this takana." B'she'en Yisrael omed al gabav. That was obvious already to everybody that if there's no Yisrael omed al gabav, you can't accept the shlita b'kuti. He didn't need to get up and make a takana about that. So now the question is, kibble mine or lo kibble mine? So now the question is, did Rabbi Zera, as we have on the one hand, Rabbi Chana or Rav Hanan, who's saying in the name of Rabbi Yaakov or Edi, who's saying in the name of Rabbi Shoban Levi, who says in the name of Bar Kapara about Rabban Gamliel Ubeitino, that they forbade Shechita Bakuti, which sounds like they forbade it across the board, even if Yisrael is watching, versus Rabbi Zera, who comes and says, isn't that only when the Yisrael's not there, and that really they're doing nothing different than the way Abaye and Rava understood the Mishnah? Again, Abaye and Rava is later, but, right, okay? And then they want to know, did Rabbi once Rabbi Zera got attacked, did he concede and change his mind and say, okay, the kind of Rabban Gamliel must have just been really to forbid it across the board, or did he stick with his original position that it's only when a non-Jew's not, when a Jew's not watching, but if a Jew's watching, it's okay, which would be very different in terms of his understanding of this takana. Is the takana across the board or not? What did Rabbi Zera think? So Tashma, let's learn it from here. To Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yasi, Ani ra'iti et Rabbi Yochanan she'achal mishchitat kuti. Okay, so Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak comes and says the name of Rabbi Yasi, that Rabbi Yasi saw Rabbi Yochanan eating from a shchita b'kuti. Now, obviously, Rabbi Yochanan is living, remember, he's an Emora, he's living after the Takana of Rabban Gamliel. Af Rabbi Yasi achal mishchitat kuti, and even Rabbi Yasi ate from a shchita b'kuti. V'tai ba Rabbi Zera. Okay, and Rabbi Zera had a question, because we want to figure out what did Rabbi Zera think. Rabbi Zera asked the question, and this is what he said. Lo shmia lehu? Did they not, okay, he wondered, did they not know that Rabban Gamliel made this takana? Is it right? Is it possible they didn't know and that's why they ate it? De'i have a shmi'a lehu, have a makablela, o dilma, shmi'a lehu velo kibluha. In other words, is it that they heard it? Okay? That if they had heard it, they would have accepted it. Right? In other words, number one possibility is they never heard of his takana, because if they would have heard that Rabban Gamliel made this takana, they never would have gone against it. That's one part of Rabbi Zeira's question. Or maybe, he suggests, they heard about his takana, the lo kibluah, but they didn't accept it. Okay? Rabbi Zeira asked this question. Did they accept his takana? Right? Did they know about it and override it? Or did they not even know about it? So, and yet, right, and then if they would have known about it, then they obviously never would have eaten from the shlita of the kuti, according to them. So, hadar pashit l'nafshe, he then explains himself what the answer is. Mistabra d'shmi'alehu v'lo kiblua, it must be they heard it and they didn't accept it. De'isal kadatach lo shmi'alehu, because if they hadn't heard about it, if you want to say that, v'yav shmi'alehu havam kablela, this is great proof. If they had heard it, right, they would have accepted it, then what in fact happened? They did something terribly wrong, right? They went against Rabban Gamliel's takana unknowingly. Okay, it was a mistake, right? In other words, the idea is that if we go along the logic that they must have known, they must have not known, and if they had known, they never would have done this. Here he says, Heichi misteyeh milta lemeichal isura. How would God have allowed such a thing to happen? To allow these rabbis to eat a non-kosher shechita, basically. Based on Rabban Gamliel, we don't accept the shechita. How could God have let something like this happen? Right? Big rabbis like this would never have come to such a mistake. Like, there must be some hashkacha there. What's his proof? We've seen this before. We're going to see it again on Daf Zayin. I won't give it away now. But there was the story about the chamor of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair that didn't eat forbidden food. And that, you know, they assumed it was kind of miraculous. That God made sure that even Beim Tansel Tzadikim wouldn't do it. Obviously, Tzadikim Atzmam. Okay, lo kol shekein. And now, what does this have to do with anything? Because if we thought that he didn't accept their answer, then what did Rabbi Zeira think about the whole thing? Remember, he thought that the takana of Rabban Gamliel was only when no Yisrael is omer al gabav. So he could have much more easily answered here. Kan Yisrael omer al gabav, kan she'ein Yisrael omer al gabav. He would have just said that the reason why they ate the meat was because they must have been washing the shechita. And that was a much better way to explain what happened with Rabbi Yochanan, would be to say, oh yeah, they ate the shechita b'chuti because Yisrael was omer al gabav. The fact that Rabbi Zeira doesn't offer that as a possibility shows that he must have agreed with them ultimately that the takana of Rabban Gamliel was even if Yisrael is watching, and no matter what, it's going to be forbidden based on the takana, and therefore alalav shmamina kibla mina shmamina. Okay, so now we have that, okay, and we're going to get to why was he goes there, that's tomorrow. But we're basically, according to this, the Mishnah seems to hold, if you hold like Abaye and Rava, that a kuti shlita is allowed. Later, Rabban Gamliel, the later Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he comes and is goes there and makes a takana that we can no longer eat the kuti shlita. Okay, continuing more.